school for this thing. There's no training. Because somebody asked me, like, oh, where can I do training? I said, huh, my son is, what you're going to do is you're going to find training. Then you wear jog bottoms, go to sets, and be doing your training because there's nothing that prepares you.
Mimi, it's so good to have you. It's so, so good to have you. And I have been thinking a lot about your career and your background. And I just want to chat quickly about the moment for you where the lines kind of blurred between, you know, filmmaking and wearing a suit. Coming from a business background, and then filmmaking must have been on the other side of things. You may have been looking at it from afar. When did you kind of decide that, you know what, I want to tell them to share the same shokoto?
That's a fantastic question. I never even thought of it exactly. So, you're hitting me with the hits today, clearly. I think it was in 2010, because I was working for an alternative investment company. I think God was just throwing me signs at this point, and I just kept blocking him, like, stop disturbing me, sir. Like, God knows what he's, you know, doing, if anything. It was when my friend's sister, who basically my family now, said we're making a film. And this was this is the great Bongo Zikwe, who did Corporal at Dawn. If people, this generation will not know.
Wow. They will not know.
Me and his daughter went to university together. So she said, her sister, their family is making a film. And I've always loved films. I loved films too much that I didn't want to be involved in the making of it. It's kind of like if you meet your hero and then your hero disappoints you, type of thing. So I always just kept it. So you're not far when you said, I just kind of kept it at bay. By the time I was good at marketing, and they needed like sponsorship documents and stuff. So I was like, okay, the company I was working with went bankrupt. So, and then I also started writing, funny enough, because I was a very angry black woman that year. So I was writing, I was doing like blogs and stuff. I started writing for like a column. My salary was like 40K a month. Again, I'm not really concerned with making money. So I was just happy to be writing. And I also look at it like I'm learning something from it. And that's just like my life, really. I never really look at the money first. I always think, okay, what can I personally gain from it? Because ultimately what I gain is going to help me gain in future. That's the way I see life, really. So I was writing on that column, and I was like, okay, I have this marketing flair thing a bit down. So I started writing sponsorship documents. And then I just realized that this is an art and it needs to be respected. That's the way I saw it. And the movie didn't make as much money as we would have liked. Then I started seeing about distribution and blah, blah. And for me, anytime something doesn't really work out, I always try and go back to the drawing board. I go back to the foundation of it. So I said, people have made money from film. And as an African child, from an African mother, I asked myself, do they have two heads? How did they do it? I want to know how they did it. So I started from I started from the bottom. So I started this whole film career as a production assistant from the very, very, I was carrying equipment. Because the thing is that if you want to get into something, you have to understand how people think, how they reason. And every film to be made has to start from somewhere. It starts from a crew or an idea or something. So, and I just started from the crew side of things. And I mean, at that point, I was okay financially, to be honest. It's not like I needed it like that. I just wanted to know what it took to be that. So it was in 2010 that the lines started blurring a bit. where I've gone from, like, finance, I was writing for a column, and then somehow I entered into, so I'll say I entered into content, I won't say I entered into film. Because from there, knowing that I want to, like, start from the bottom, I did all of that. Then I started learning about, like, equipment and stuff. Then I joined the National Broadcasting Commission because I wanted to understand the laws of content in itself. So it kind of started from that. But if I had to pick, it was 2010, that everything went, whoop, it's scatter, as we say.
Oh my gosh. Okay, first and foremost, when you said you started all the way from being a production assistant and you just kept going up the ladder, and I was like, you actually went that deep. Like, you actually took it upon yourself to actually get into the very nitty-gritty of it. That is very commendable, not just because of the fact that you did it, but because you are able to identify from the very early on that you needed to identify with the people who were doing the job. And that's something that I think that a lot of us in any career can gain from, in any business, in any vendor, that if you're coming from the outside, you know, there are people on the inside that have been doing this that you can learn from, and you can grow from, and you can benefit from. But that being said, it is so cool that you were able to find that point where you merged. And now that you are, as I was saying, it's an honor to first of all be in your presence, because it's because I don't want to toot your horn too much, but it needs to be tooted a bit, you know. you've produced some of the biggest blockbusters in Nigerian cinema. You have led teams that have, you know, been at the forefront of the biggest marketing campaigns of Nigerian films, the biggest production of Nigerian films. Your recent film, Adire, is doing exceptionally well on Netflix. Congratulations, by the way. It's so good to be in the presence of someone that is doing so well. And when you have a conversation with them, yeah, just chilled and just cool about it. And you're just like, you know, they're just so humble about it. Like, this, you know, like.
I hope not. Okay, I will do. Thank you. Well, every time I hear this about myself, I always think, like, are they talking about me? Because I never see myself in this light. I never stop to smell the roses. I just keep going. So, like, it was until I had to put, like, a bio together. And I was just, like, writing. I said, ah, mommy, that? Oh,
it touched you.
Like,
you felt something in.
Yeah, as honest, I do miss my former team. Like, they always were the ones that needed to remind me, because I'm just like, on to the next one.
You just pointed out your former team, and I actually want to touch on that, because you worked at Filmo for quite some time. I mean, quite some time. You really, it was what they call labor of love right there. And with every season in life, you know, a season starts and a season ends. And so you come through that season and you no longer are at Film One. But I want to talk about your experience there as a filmmaker. And we're talking to a lot of filmmakers in this, on this podcast. And I am curious as to what it required for you. What was your, as it were, day-to-day as a film exec? What does that entail? What does that look like, especially within the scope of the Nigerian or African market? I really believe that a lot of the times, a lot of the things that we hear in the abroad, it doesn't quite always mirror the very same situations here.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I did that strength. Well, first thing. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. How does my day usually begin? To be honest, it doesn't really end. That's the truth, because me and Moses, me and Moses, like, sometimes we'll be chatting to, like, 2 a.m., you know, just discussing ideas, like, where are we staying? And then I'm up by 8 again, because I also think better at night, where the ideas keep going. In fact, how Moses put up with me, I don't even know, because, I mean, and I'm very cool with his wife. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I wanted to be made. But when I do, when I do take my break between that 2 and 8 a.m., it's now, okay. So the first thing I always think of is, like, whenever I look at a story, I always say, like, does this story need to be told? That's the first question I ever ask. If my answer is yes, then I die there. Really, that's how, so the first thing I have to look for in myself is the need for that story to be made, because a film is basically my child. That's the way I look at it. And now, however, it's even like, even solidifies it even more. So I make sure, first of all, that my child is in the right hands, is in the right school, and the right people around this child to make it what it needs to be. I was at a conference thing with Dame Taiwo, Ajayi Laiset, and she did like a master class, and she pulled me up and she showed me what like acting was. I was like, nah, I can't do this. It's not for it takes a lot, you know, out of you. To be honest, there's no part of like film I've not done one day in their lives to see what they go through. And I think that's what also helped do the job with ease, because now that I understand what it is that you're going through, it helps me plan more and it helps me make sure that you feel safe. Because if you don't feel safe going on the set, that film is going to be affected, like one way or the other. I don't tolerate disrespect. It's just not my... And the other thing is that people hide a lot of things from me because they know that once I find out, it's like... it's done. Once I find out, oh, no, I'm coming to that set. Nothing. I wanna come. Yeah. I also make sure that I wasn't just sitting up in the office. Like, I always made sure I was even on set. Even if it wasn't my place to be, I'll say, okay, I think in actual reality, like to say, oh, like I'm a producer on a film, I don't think it's up to like, I think it was like 4 films. Like I say, like, oh, I have producer title. The rest is either co-EP or supervising producer or something.
Yeah.
But I made sure like I was on set so that when I'm entering boardrooms, I can speak from that side. I've also tried to write a script as well. Funny enough, there are some films that I've actually written stuff in, like you would hear my lines, but that story for another day inside. But yeah, I do all of that. So really, that was my life as a film exec, having to take care of the creative, having to take care of the finance people, the marketers, the marketing team, the brand team, side, and then face a boardroom or... you know, what you call it in film one, it was called EXCO, the executive committee, to just explain what it is that's going on. But yeah, film execs, hats off to you lot, because it's a lot that we have to deal with. Wow. Yeah. And then my two words I hate.
There's no school for this.
Sorry? There's no school.
I said there's no school for
this. There's no school for this thing. There's no training. Because somebody asked me, like, oh, where can I do training? I said, huh, my son is, what you're going to do is you're going to find training. Yeah, you wear jog bottoms, go to set, and be doing your training, because there's nothing that prepares you for this thing. There's just, and you don't even know what kind of creative you're going to get. You might get the creative that says, I can only speak to you within 1 and 3 because that's when my brain functions. Or you meet one that says, I need to stay at the wall. Or you meet one that you can't even speak to because they're in their zone and they'll come out for air when they are ready. You know, there's so many kind of creatives that you need to school for that. There's no, even when they say, oh, the how, what's that thing, different personalities. It's like, well, what you need to actually learn is psychology or be a psychiatrist. That's what you need to be in this thing. You become a therapist. Actually, that's the training that people should do. But yeah, that was my life as a film exec. Trying to survive. Yeah. That was it.
You wanted to point out 2 things, and I really would love to hear that. There were 2 things you wanted to point out. I'm sorry I cut you short there, but
yeah.
I don't know if you can recall what those 2 things were.
2 things for what? What was the context of it?
At the end of your conversation about being a film exec, you were about to point out two things that were kind of like your mantra, your driving force, your psychology, your thought process, being an exec.
I don't remember.
Oh, wow. Okay, no worries.
But I can remember what I always used as my mantra, though, which was my first thing I always said was, there's no right or wrong. There's only opinion.
Yeah.
And that's always helped me on this thing, because somebody going to call from set and say this person did this thing. Well, that person's side, they are right. And your side, you're right. So like, I didn't put this down to opinion. So I just always had to become judge, jury, and everything, and just understand where each person was coming from, and like solve things. As one of my friends who's an actress, she said she's a producer. She said that I'm the only person that she's met that can reply calmly when bashing is happening. That I would say things like, "I'm with you," but if we just look at it this way, I find it has always worked. For me. Then the second thing I always use is, I trust you, but not the devil in you. I always use that. Just never know who's going to screw you over, to be honest. And you guys might be chummy and everything, but they just wake up and choose violence. So I never use that to get angry with anything. I mean, growing up as an angry child, it's not a cute look. I didn't feel like I wanted to use that in life. So like, it takes a lot for me to get to that point. It really takes, I mean, the only person I can get angry with is my husband. And that's because we signed something, like, we're in this together, somehow. But anyway, I can't fight with you because you're not my husband. Like, there's no, we're already to me. We'll see after. But yeah, those are two things I always used in my life as an exec.
Amazing, so, amazing. There's an empathy that you shared that is not usually associated with the suit, right? It's not usually associated with the business side of things. And when you were talking about the way you have to cater to or take care of, that was your specific word, take care of, you know, every department. I found that very moving. But at the same time, I found that very rare. In the context of business and film, and as someone who also has been in the industry, it's the one thing that scares a lot of people, and personally, that is something that has really been a concern for me, has been the lack of welfare of the creative or of the technical people or whoever it is that forms up the film industry. The lack of welfare has been a big issue for a very long time. And the other day, I was having a conversation with a friend, and we're talking about how how many people have health insurance, how many people have, any of those kinds of things going into the industry. It is incredibly difficult to have an ecosystem that's, the ecosystem has not really fully supported that. But, with new talent coming up with film industries like yours or studios like yours, we are seeing more of that come up. And I'm going back to, how can that be a thing? Not this is the special place that does this thing. But how can that thing across the entire industry?
I think the first problem is with us Nigerians. That's, and the truth, I mean, it might be controversial, but truth, because if I tell you that I'm going to pay you a certain fee and I explain to you that I'm going to deduct tax or HMO, blah, 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 you're going to be like, I want my money. So if you're not, if you're not ready to take care of yourself, there's only so much I can do. Because a friend of mine has started a company called Grid Management, and they have grid tools. And creators can actually register with them so that they can actively open up like pensions, HMO. And I always, whenever I'm on set and I say, something happens, I'm like, there's no HMO. And they laugh. And I'm just like, how are you laughing? Like, how is this not a thing that is bothering you? I can't not have HMO. Like, I cannot not. Even now that, like, I'm not in an office, I still have HMO, really. And that was me choosing to take care of myself and my family, because I have a family. And if you see bills, ordinary malaria, I remember, like, I can't remember what how sick I got. And then I was like, oh, I went to the hospital. And they're like, oh, I hope the bills were not too much. And I'm like, what bills? I have HMO. And so they're like, ah, I just spent 150K. And I'm like, that did not motivate you to open HMO on top of malaria. Malaria like this, I cannot buy those. And so the truth of the matter is, like, if creatives, if crew don't wake up and say, like, I need this, then there's only so much any of us can do. If you accept change, then change will happen. I mean, I've been blessed to work with, you know, individuals that think like that. So that's why I've never really had this problem. But I'm even like any film I work on now, I'm going to like be asking people, do you have HMO? Like, I'm generally going to make it a thing now, which I didn't before, really, because. And that's because I was dealing with like way too many movies and way too many crew members to address anybody. But to be honest, I started trying, but I didn't make it a focus. But now I'm going to make it a focus. Like, do you have this? Do you have that? Mm-hmm. And these things cost like 5K a month or something. It doesn't take that much from you, really. And I'll go back to saying that what I've deduced is that creatives or whoever it is in the film industry generally don't respect what they do. That's why they do it anyhow. Because there's no banker you're going to meet, nobody in investment that don't have all this thing sorted out, like the taxes, the HMO, blah, blah, blah. I don't blame them because the country that we are in don't particularly respect creatives. You want to watch the content, but you are not really for the people that make it. You know, and it's just something I've noticed. I've always said this thing, like, yeah. I think I was on a Zenith panel. I always just choose violence every 3 to 5 business days, to be honest. And that day, I just happened to choose violence. And I was at Zenith panel, and it was their import, their export conference, like celebrating Nigerian exports. And a lot of their Zenith officials came to speak about exports that are making money instead of like just focusing on like the stock exchange and stuff. And they mentioned rice, they mentioned gold, all those commodities. Then at some point they mentioned music. They didn't really speak on film. But then we invited a film company to come to discuss on this panel about this thing. And I to be honest, like, I had a whole thing in my mind, but when I was watching all the executives like give this thing, and I'm waiting like, okay, Nollywood is gonna come up any minute now. I'm waiting to speak on this. Well, there are numbers that show what the GDP contribution of Nollywood is, if anything. So I was like, it's gonna come up. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, like, 3 executives came on stage and nobody had mentioned this Nollywood part of things. So I get on the stage, and to be honest, it was more than I was meant to be there. And he just chucked me into this thing last minute. And I was like, I don't want to do this. I hate all these public speaking things because I have bad mouth. And he didn't answer me. I was like, okay, I'm like, thank God you know what's happening. I said, okay. So me, I already came with violence in my mind. I sat on the stage and I sit there and I say, Korea gets 2.5 billion popped into its industry by Netflix alone. And South Korea realized that they had a bad rep in terms of like North and South Korea and all the fights. So they felt like the best way to export and show people that they are normal was through content. So they started actively in you know, their content, like to attract investors into their country. And then I said, you know, India as well, Netflix, I think, pumped like $200 million to grow their industry. And I was like, South Africa was like, I think, $17.5 million. And I think Nigeria was like, no, it was like, I can't remember the numbers now, so don't this thing. All I remember is our numbers were like in single digits. It was single or double digits. It wasn't a 3 digit thing.
Yeah.
I think it was either 17.5 million over the past 3 years and like maybe like $100 million in like South Africa or something like that. I can't remember. But it was a huge amount. And the whole hall went quiet. And I said, the truth of the matter is, you bankers have never particularly cared about what we do. Because every institution needs a bank. Whether it's a distributor, whether it's an exhibitor, whether it's an equipment person, we all need banks. And CBN put out this, you know, call for grants, I believe, or sorry, not grants, loans that you can take. And I had bankers keep telling me that we don't understand your industry. So I told them, I said, the irony of me sitting on a Zenith stage to discuss Nollywood, when I know that most of you in this hall have not decided to do the work to understand Nollywood, it's like, so I told them, I said, like, the problem is that bankers have been here and filmmakers have been here. And what was in between was what God cannot do does not exist. Or God when. Like, God has been in the middle of all of us. But if we come like this, we are unstoppable because Korea started with private before the government jump on board. Like, we can, it can happen, really. But like, Ketty, I'm necessarily passionate now.
Oh my gosh.
How did we get here again? What did you initially ask me that made me go down this path?
We started on a journey that has led us on another journey.
But my point was basically that, like, the reason why we don't have this establishment and this structure is just that we don't have the respect that we need. But it doesn't matter, like, if we don't push ourselves forward. And to be honest, that's a Nigerian mentality anyways, is that I'll give you lemon and then make lemon tarts and make lemon pie. And with one melon, a Nigerian can make at least four, maybe you get lemon drink, lemon enter, lemon pie you enter. Like, that's us, really. And I just keep getting worried that, like, that's the mental. We can't keep having that mentality till forever. It's a fantastic mentality to have, but if we don't have structures in place for little things like this, I mean, let's think about it now. Like, there are some jobs that ultimately thousands of people are affected because of one film. That's from crew to post to writers to exhibitors, to distributors, to the staff that work in the cinemas. One film affects all these people. Why can't we just have like a structure in place? I mean, what to be honest, I'm taking from 2024 is the president's decision to hire the people that he hired or elected. I don't know, I've forgotten the terms. I used to be a politician, but I've forgotten all these things now.
Yeah.
Depends on, like, now we have people. I mean, we have the likes of like Obi Asika, you know, getting, you know, the director of arts and all that business. So I really actively do see that they are trying to do well by the industry. I think they've realized as well that there hasn't been enough respect for this industry, that we are always quick to shout is number two largest in the world or number three. Washa top three, Sha. And it's not that put it. And to be honest, if you see that change, I genuinely do believe, and I have to believe this, that if you see that the government is making an effort, maybe we too can start caring about ourselves too and saying, I need to put some form of structure in my life so that I can do this thing long term. Nobody wants to be online begging for money, you know, for an amputated record. Like, it's not what they set out to do. But if you don't see, that's what I never understand. I used to tell my husband that you see something in your front, but the hope you used to jump over the thing is your IG. You are seeing your future in front of you, but yet, like, you're trying to. It saddens me every time I have to see that. And I'm just like, guys, get your pension sorted out. Like, just put something in. I do that for my kids. I have an education trust fund for them. Like, I put something in every month for them. Even if our naira is devaluing, whatever, let me just know that I put something in for a rainy day. But yeah, I don't know. Sorry for my rant and my passion.
That was a beautiful rant right there. I mean, it does go to show the heart that you have for the industry. You know, it just goes to show how passionate you are. Mimi, you've been not just an amazing guest, you've been an amazing person in the way you've, you know, engaged in this conversation with me. And like I said, I'll say it again, please do more interviews. We'd love to hear from you more. And I actually would love to have another one, hopefully soon.
Yeah, let's see how it goes. I was in a good mood when I said yes to this, so let's see if the good mood comes again. Let's just pray to the gods. I definitely appreciate everything you've said, but I mean, I'm not gonna lie, everything that I am was because I had a strong and supportive team behind me. I had the best boss I could have ever asked for in Moses. Like, that's my brother. He never treated me like anything less. So he gave me the space to be who I wanted to be. And also my job to protect him. So we protected each other. And that was the team I had. We always protected each other. We always stood by each other. And I just feel like if people continue like that, you always get the best out of anything that you want. So as much as I take all the compliments, I can't not mention the people that helped me do whatever it is I did with ease and not feel pressured. So, yeah, that's my sign off, I guess.
Wow.